Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and this is Austin Chadwick, my co-host. And today we have a guest, Michael Maglacio, and we're going to talk a little bit about remote mobbing, remote learning, and remote tooling, and what that means. So, Michael, could you, also known as Migs, right?
Can you give us
a little introduction, and maybe we can get into our first topic after that.
Sure, absolutely. So, as mentioned, my name is Michael Maglacio. I go by Migs mostly. Lots of Michaels in the world. This just makes it easier. I'm actually a lead software engineering coach at Target Corporate. Now, what does that mean? That means that I demystify technology or make it less scary through a variety of individual and corporate level initiatives. Mouthful, huge mouthful. What that basically means is I help make software engineering better. Before that, I was a software developer for over a decade at lead and individual levels across teams from Rochester, Minnesota to Minneapolis to San Francisco. So I've been all over. My current role is kind of part engineer and architect, part guidance counselor, and part technical evangelist. So no day is the same. We do a lot of different things to help a lot of different teams. I love outreach. That's kind of why I'm here talking to you folks. I speak about tech and coaching around the world, including in Japan. So a lot of fun there as well.
Fantastic. So maybe we can get into our first topic. So I wanted to kind of start out with mob programming and remote mob programming.
Yeah.
And so what were your experiences like there? Were you mobbing in person before you had to go remote? What was that transition like?
Yeah, absolutely. So I didn't actually have a lot of practical experience with mobbing before becoming a software engineering coach. The role that I had previously to that was kind of focused around basically a lot of products in the fulfillment space in a retailer that wasn't Target. And we actually spent a lot of time there doing pair programming coupled with some code walkthroughs for really complicated pieces of code. So folks would usually pair and then we'd get together with the lead engineer and he'd kind of talk through some of the harder things. So we tried to de-silo. But what ended up happening with that a lot of the time was that people wouldn't necessarily pick up on those really complicated sharing sessions where people were just kind of sharing code on the screen and walking through it because they weren't going hands-on. So what would happen is we'd have a code walkthrough and then inevitably at 3 a.m. something would go down, we'd get a phone call. And if our hero developer or lead developer was not the one on that call, sometimes it would not end, or it would take a while to get things working. And I knew about pairing. I didn't really, like I said, have a lot of experience to mobbing, but I knew what wasn't working. And then when I finally became a coach, assisting teams at Target, we were mobbing basically from the get-go. What we do, like I said, is we help teams. They come into our immersive learning space and we kind of help them learn and work better together. And one of the tools that we use, especially with mixed experience teams, is in-person mobbing. And when I say mixed experience, I mean like some people are starting all the way from learning Git all the way through people who have been engineering for 10, 20 years on the same team. And we would have this in a variety of different ways. So our in-person mobbing practices would tend to vary from team to team. In some cases, in all cases, we would be using the Mobster tool, which is basically a kind of open source tool that would actually track all the facilitators' tasks for you. So you wouldn't have to worry about being anything other than a driver or a mob participant. You wouldn't have a separate facilitator worrying about keeping time, making sure people switch over, even keeping breaks. All of that is built into the tool, so none of the cognitive load is present and people can just focus on the task at hand.
Nice. That's awesome. That's some good background there. And I think kind of transitioning into the remote world, I've heard some things about some tooling or experiments you've run with how to transition that to remote. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So like mentioning, talking about the in-person mobbing, right? So it was very effective in helping distribute knowledge differently than when I talked about like the previous position where we'd have those walkthroughs and we'd have pairing, but we'd still have silos. So now there's no silos because everybody's working on the same thing. But one thing that we noticed a lot, or at least that I noticed a lot as a coach, was that we were seeing a lot of cognitive load in the mobbing sessions that appeared to have an effect on how effective the team was. And so some spaces are not going to be mobbing friendly. Fortunate enough, we have kind of an open learning environment, immersive learning environment, where you have a large screen, you have walls, you have a pod, you have a long table, basically an environment that makes it easy to mob. But some places don't have that, right? And of course, you have things like lighting, you have noise, you have psychological safety. If your manager is working in the cube right next to you and you're sitting there mobbing and you're a new team member, you're going to freeze up regardless of what the rules of the mob are. Even if the rules of the mob are the driver doesn't do anything until the mob tells them, which, I mean, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Even then, you're going to freeze up. And half the time, even when I'm teaching or coaching and I'm part of the mob and I'm typing, half the time, every other character is wrong and I'm going to have to delete it. And I'm not even nervous. It's just kind of this effect that it has, which is part of that cognitive load thing, right? But the thing that we saw people struggling the most with, at least in terms of in-person mobbing, was actually fighting the computer itself. Because you're dealing with a driver computer, right? And you're rotating people around, you're having somebody who might have a Windows box suddenly start to have to switch over to Mac. You've got somebody who's used to a certain IDE, say IntelliJ, and now they're in Eclipse. You've got different keyboard shortcuts. You've got a different size screen. We have people of different disparate age groups, right? We've got somebody who has a larger font size versus a smaller font size. You've got people, if the table is too long, you've got people kind of squinting, trying to see what's on the screen, and it's uncomfortable. So all of this was kind of making things a little bit more difficult than it needed to be. And I was having some conversations actually, and this is before COVID, a year or so before COVID, I was having these conversations with my wife, who is also a software developer, very interested in educating people. She has authored some Pluralsight courses. She's very, very into this stuff. And we were kind of talking through it. And we happened to be students in a master's program, the Georgia Tech OMSCS program. And one of the classes in that program is you can create some tooling to help people learn. And as we were talking through this, we kind of had a eureka moment where it's like, wait a minute, mobbing, learning to code. How can we address some of these cognitive load issues? Let's find out. And so we ended up building out a tool called CodeHort, which is like CodeHort. So kind of a play on cohort. And what it is it's an interactive shared code editor in JavaScript in this case. That is not designed necessarily to write, you know, full on software like IDE styles, like the Visual Studio Code and some of these other things. But what it does have is it has the ability to manage your timing, your driver, in the same way as you do in Mobster, where basically only the driver can edit their code at that time, and then it switches out as you go. And it also has a set of coding exercises of different difficulty levels where folks can kind of solve programming problems as a team. And these are programming problems that are similar to kind of the ones that folks get asked in technical interviews, but we used it as kind of a way to, figure out how to measure whether these issues of cognitive load or other things that we see in-person mobbing could be solved by having a tool like this. So we built this out and we ran a couple of experiments and found out some interesting things.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now and I see there's a video feed on there too. Is that built into the tool?
It's not, no, the video feed is not built into the tool. Got it.
Okay. Yeah. So so it shares the code real time.
Yes, and everybody can connect to the same, everybody connects to it and then anybody can run it, so.
Nice. That's fascinating. So, do you see anything specific in results or, you know, was it just kind of like anecdotal and you ask people if they feel less fatigued at the end or something along those lines? How did you, what data did you have and how did you collect that data?
Yeah, good question. So, we have quantitative and qualitative results. So we have numbers and we have feelings, which is awesome because we got both dimensions, right? So what we did is we took a group of folks who were kind of, again, just like my teams at work, a very mixed experience team. We have folks who have been programming for a long time. We've got folks who have been programming for a long time in JavaScript, folks that are programming for a long time but are new to the language, and then someone who came in from a boot camp. We stuck them all together and we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you mob through some programming exercises. The first one is going to be using traditional mobbing formats. So we're going to have one machine, we're going to have mobster, and everybody's going to, you know, take a turn here. We're going to have it measured with a period of 10 minutes per person and so on. So just kind of the traditional mobbing format, right? And we worked through that. Then we had them connect to our tool and basically run through exercises of a similar difficulty. Now, the problem being with this way is you can't run the same problem twice. You'd have to run different teams through the same problem in order to not taint the data. So basically the idea is we wanted to have something be a similar difficulty, but can't be the same thing because they already just solved it. So throwing the same problem at them, they'll run through it quicker and we won't be able to judge the capacity of judge the effectiveness of the tool, right? So yeah. We went through and we did that. So they went through and they did activities using our tool. So everybody had their own machine. Everything was managed through Codehort. There was no need for Mobster, and everybody connected to it and solved the problem. So what we found is that there was about a 20 to 25% increase in efficiency with our tool versus the traditional mobbing method. And in terms of the reduction of cognitive load, the biggest factor for them was actually the computer, which is kind of what we saw before, with a secondary one being actually switching out. So basically fighting Mobster to click the next person, making sure that the screen share isn't taken over by Mobster. And like there's a little bit, and I'm not blaming Mobster as a tool. It's just like the process of switching. In Codehort, it's kind of automatic. It's like click okay and you're on to the next person. Whereas with Mobster, it blanks out your screen. You have to kind of tweak it. You have to figure out what's going on and then move on. So so we found kind of positive effects in both ways, which was kind of cool to see.
I guess my follow-up question is, and one that's fantastic. It's always, it's really encouraging to see so many great tools being made out there for mobbing, and it's a lot of fun. So I think the question I have has to do with maybe the distinction between you have a bunch of people being thrown together to mob for the first time, and it's kind mm-hmm. of like a short-term temporary mobbing scenario for learning right. or something like yes. that versus, exactly. yeah, versus like a long-term team, you know what I mean? Versus kind of thing. So is Codehort more targeting one of those two? I'm guessing. Yeah.
For us, it was a means of doing these experiments. So in our capacity, what I'm intending to use it for, and we haven't had a lot of hands-on trials yet, other than mm-hmm. you know kind of these experiments, is as a learning tool. Gotcha. So for folks who are either teams of mixed experience who want to have some hands-on time, or folks who are just learning coding for the first time, learning mobbing for the first time, it's kind of a good way to get introduced to both concepts in a new way.
And I think that is novel, because I think, you know, if you follow the mob programming hashtag on Twitter and other things, you know, standing teams, you know, so to speak, and they switch on occasion and things like that. But people who work together longer than a day, for example, let's say a week or at least a couple sure. of weeks or a month, you know, a mob team, they usually figure it out, I think. And then my guess would be is that cognitive load goes down. It's high yes. on day one, right? But the problem I see again and again, just seeing people who do the kind of like, hey, let's get together and mob for an hour tonight, you know, or hey, I'm going to do this workshop. And I think we saw it recently in a workshop too, is that first hour can be dicey. First half an hour to an hour can be dicey.
Oh yeah.
Like getting the tool to work, understanding the tool, understanding what's going on. And so I think streamlining that first hour of eliminating a lot of the waste that goes on, I think is a good thing.
That waste can come from a lot of different places too. Like you say, the tooling, the format, where are we in a physical space? In the case of like when you're mobbing in person, is everybody connected? Is anybody having internet issues when you're mobbing remotely? Yeah. There's all of those things that come up, right? So there's a lot of places where until you're in the groove, so to speak, you can run into a lot of roadblocks or stumbling blocks, I guess you could say as well.
Well, that's great. I guess I had a practical question. So, You have this Codehort tool and you're using it in some context, but it's not publicly available yet. Is that
not publicly available yet? Okay. We've just like, so again, it was for an for a class called Educational Technology, where as part of the online Georgia Tech Masters, one of the things that they want to do is obviously, because it's a fully online program, the person who's in charge of that program, Dr. David Joyner, came up with this class to actually have new ways of kind of learning or interacting with people on a large scale like this. And you know, we're all dealing with new things, even in concept of beyond remote mobbing, but just learning remotely, working together remotely, everything is kind of in a new way. So even the fact that we had this before COVID, and we've been taking classes remotely before COVID, there's been a general trend towards trying to figure out how to do this. COVID just kind of gave us the kick in the rear we needed to actually implement some of these things. But this is something that folks have been thinking about for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that's fantastic. You're partnering with universities. I know we've done quite a bit of that. And I know, Chris, you've been passionate about that for a while. It mobbing with people who are learning to code for the first time or learning to mob for the first time always gives you, you always learn so much from that experience.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. What led you kind of to being involved in the just because of your master's program? Is that what kind of got you there? Yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny because for me, like, becoming a coach was really, really exciting because I've always kind of had had this tendency toward people. I've been more of a people-centric engineer, but one that didn't really necessarily have that drive to become an SEM right away, like a senior engineering manager. I wanted to be like, I wanted to help people and mentor people and you know, kind of be in that mode without actually, you know, fully going in that direction. Basically, I want to do everything except, you know, be signing off somebody's performance reviews. If I can have every aspect of it that doesn't include that, I'd be awesome. But in my previous position, I found myself just attending a lot of meetings and not really being able to influence things from either a technical capacity or being able to give my team the help that they needed. So when my wife Lisa brought this coaching position to my attention that was open at Target, it was a really obvious sell for me. And I've always loved, you know, sharing knowledge and interacting with folks, and to be empowered to actually be able to do that in a day-to-day job has been just mind-blowing for me. So I've always had that general trend towards education, towards sharing, towards, like, you know, helping people build better. But now finally it's something that I'm able to do day in and day out.
Nice. Awesome. Fantastic.
I kind of wanted to pivot a little bit and just talk about, I guess, learning in the remote environment and I guess just going from more traditional learning activities to mobbing for learning. Mm-hmm. I know earlier you had talked about the hero developer and
yes,
the fear of changing the system. I know that I've seen that in my past, and I've seen that with mobbing, more people are willing to take up that banner of rescuing the code, and it doesn't have to be a developer anymore. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. And I guess I'm trying to figure out exactly which direction to take this. Yeah. Beyond mobbing into remote learning. So there's a lot of things to keep in mind. Basically, as coaches, right, we spend a lot of our time building out these kinds of training. So not only in terms of helping folks out with software, but in terms of educating folks on a wider scale. So on things like architecture, on things like observability, best practices. So again, I mentioned technical evangelist is part of that role. That's part of it too, is kind of being able to share those best practices across, making sure that folks can do that and have the power to do that and the knowledge to do that. So we spend a lot of time actually working through kinds of facilitation kind of tips and tricks for the remote world that are actually a little bit different than we would be offline. So for an example, something that's been known for a while, how long do you think you can hold somebody's attention in terms of like giving a traditional presentation, like showing a slide? How long do you think you have them before they go off and start checking their mail, tweeting, doing whatever they're doing? Give me a guess. How long?
Go first, Chris.
Oh, So I make all of my slides pictures and I don't include any words. So I would say maybe, maybe 99 milliseconds or so.
it's kind of a okay, joke. Very short amount of time. Okay. What do you think?
I'm thinking 5 minutes, but.
Okay. So there's some debating research on this.
Yeah.
Generally, if you're talking about engaging with the full presentation, so like still listening to you, you've got probably 7 minutes. If you're talking about the actual static slide, you're talking about 45 seconds. So basically it's a very, very difficult thing to grab people and hold them, especially if they're required to be there, and make sure that they remain engaged with you. So we've been diving head on into the Zoom tools and harnessing breakout rooms, been harnessing annotations. So we do worksheets as a part of our workshops that actually have folks go into breakout rooms and use the annotate feature. So drawing on the screen to solve it together as a group. We have a lot of polls. We have a lot of survey type activities inside of there that make sure that about at least every 7 minutes, people are doing something. Because if not, and you're talking at them for 3 hours, they're gone. They haven't learned anything and you've wasted your time. So, and there's a lot to this, right? There's a lot of nuance to it. There's a lot of things even learning from taking the remote courses at Georgia Tech and understanding like how they do things versus how, you know, we do things in a corporate environment is a little bit different, but also we're doing things at a different scale than they are. But generally what we've leaned into as coaches has been using the tools to make it as interactive and as engaging as possible, which is a lot easier to say than do.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting to me about it is almost the thing in mobbing that keeps engagement high, right? Is like, even if your mob
Constant
is seven
turnover.
People, right? Even if your mob is seven people, if you have a short timer, you're going to be driving and navigating once, you know, in 20
you
minutes.
You better be
right?
paying attention. If you're going off and tweeting and then you're on deck, you're not going to know what to do. And then whoops.
right.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like trying to get that same, kick for other things. If you're not mobbing code, you're not collaboratively working on something. If
yes.
this learning atmosphere where, hey, I'm going to be doing something every 7 minutes or less, you know, I'm going to be involved
yes.
in a poll or drawing or a breakout room.
Yes.
And I was recently involved in a training, and one of the biggest feedback items I saw from all the participants was more breakout rooms and more of the stuff you're kind of talking about. So I totally agree. I had another pivot, Chris, do you have any other questions on this topic?
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm very fascinated by kind of coaching, mobbing, at Target, since you've already mentioned the name Target.
Sure.
What's your experience has been like there? How has mobbing played a part in that? And I'm just fascinated by your coaching there. Yeah.
So again, I can only speak on my personal experiences. I'm not speaking for the company, but I can say that in terms of the coaching team that I'm a part of. So we have a large coaching team. Half of it is technical software engineering. That's what I'm a part of. And the other half is agile product coaching. And generally what we do is we'll actually work together with the kind of a partner coach from the other team to kind of help out with what teams need. So generally if somebody comes to us and says, you know, I need to learn Spock. This is a new one that just came up recently. I need to learn Spock. So generally when somebody comes to you and says, I need to learn Spock, that might not necessarily be, I need to learn Spock. Usually it's, I need to learn Spock and my manager is breathing down because we went down last week because we don't have any tests and there's all this stuff. So long story short, technical problems are people problems most of the time. And even if they're not, they're process problems, which when refactored turn into people problems anyway. So we spend a lot of time working with partner coaches to really uncover what it is people are asking for, because usually the first ask that they have for you is not necessarily the thing that they're actually looking for. So we work with a team, we talk with them, we bring them in, we try to figure out what it is that we can do to help them. And a lot of that, if it's technical things, if it's being introduced to new technologies, if it's being introduced to new ways of working, mobbing is going to play a huge part in that.
Okay. So that's fantastic. So it's less of like, hey, you know, come coach and work with the team as they're working on real code. It's kind of more like, hey, we have a team and we want to learn this, and you kind of design an immersive experience for them to learn something, so to speak?
It's both. We have folks who are coming in, like, we already have our own stuff. Let's you know, help me out here with process or help me out with tech. It's, we want to learn something brand new, or we just suddenly are becoming engineers because we're building out a greenfield product that we want to help us out with our infrastructure or our, you know, the work that we do day to day. So we want to build an internal tool, but we don't have a lot of experience with this. So can you help us? That's why I say every day is different, because the technology teams at Target are vast. There's a lot of folks with a lot of different specialties and experiences, and they're a really bright group of people. And being able to serve those folks differently depending on what they need, because everything changes so quickly, especially now. I mean, look at the new reality we're living in and how quickly everybody just had to adapt to that. So we've played no small part in that either. So there's a lot of ways to approach things, and we have a lot of different ways of helping teams. So you're absolutely right. The answer is yes. And so we have both.
Nice. That's fascinating. And what a cool thing, I think, because, you know, people want to learn and grow, and then they'll come to do that through what you and your team offer, which will often involve mobbing. And so it's a great gateway, so to speak, to mobbing, because I think people's guard is usually down when it's for learning. Right. Because there's because there's no arguments like about, oh, is this more efficient? And do I have to justify this to 7 managers to do it, right?
Absolutely. And there's a reason why we have a dedicated space for that. We do not go to their space and practice with them. They come to us. And so the space is neutral. Anything there is the team's thing. What happens in our space stays in our space. You don't have to worry about us talking to management. You don't have to worry about any of that. It's a safe space. We are, our whole job is to help you. Whatever you need, we'll give you the power to do it. And if we don't know the answer, we'll put you in touch with somebody who does.
Awesome. Yeah. And I think it in a way is a way to help with the diffusion of innovation, right? Because it creates a safe space to try things, right?
And Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's something our agile product coaches will never stop talking about with the agile process and everything else. It's so important to experiment, try, measure, rework, and move on. Just try to figure out what works for you. And that's the other thing too, is in regards to software development process, in regards to agile process, in regards to a lot of different things, right? Teams are going to do what works for them. We can only provide a toolbox of things and suggestions, but really it's going to be on the teams to kind of figure out their cadence and figure out where they're going to land.
Fantastic. But,
what is it like when, so obviously you might have some more traditional teams and in other cases you might have, teams more willing to experiment, that sort of thing. I guess, like, what is the variance when you're introducing mobbing to a team for the first time? What are some examples or things that you've encountered when introducing mobbing to a team?
So that's a great question. And actually, I've seen it kind of all over the board. I've introduced mobbing as a concept to teams who are kind of brand new and starting a greenfield project. I've helped facilitate mobbing sessions where folks have already tried to make mobbing a part of their cadence for their sprint. So every week or so, maybe for an hour or two, they'd be mobbing on something. But in that case, we had some team dynamic things where the more experienced folks would not necessarily let go of the keyboard as often as they would need to. And because they weren't, so their process didn't have a lot of the tooling in place. So they had a facilitator and other things that were not necessarily being consistent. So helping them develop some of that consistency and build some of that psychological safety with each other to have that to have that ability to learn and to improve together. So really, there's a lot of different experiences depending on the teams that I've helped. I can go on and on and on, but those are two examples that kind of stick out in my head.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, and if you're able to share, what have you seen as far as, experiment results in from your perspective as far as the diffusion of innovation? So people come to your kind of like dojo or, learning type environment. Yeah. and then they go back to how they were working before, maybe, right? And so how often have you seen people take things into that next, into their real work, so to speak?
Sure. Good question. And just like any team or just like any kind of initiative like this, it's going to vary. Yeah. I've seen it all over the board. Generally what I've found, and this is just a human psychology thing, it doesn't have anything to do with target, doesn't have anything to do with any of the practices that we learn, but the more eager somebody is to show up in the first place. So basically if somebody wants help as opposed to getting pushed, the more likely the thing is, the more likely the practices are to be sticky. And that's just, like I said, a general human psychology, a general thing. The other thing that I've seen in regards to the stickiness of practice that can be a little bit more of a corporate level thing is just keeping teams together. So the more that the teams stay sticky or stay stable, I should say, the more stable the team is, the more sticky the learning will be.
So that's fantastic. So that kind of resonates with what we've seen elsewhere, right? Where you have the two things, right? Intention, the people want to learn, they want to try yes. something else. And they are able to do it with people who also want to try and learn, right?
Because exactly.
You have more courage if there's more with you wanting to do it, right? As opposed to, I'm the one person on my team out of eight who wants to try this weird thing and maybe I don't care about it as much as I thought I did, you know, kind of
psychology absolutely. Going on.
So, I mean, maybe this is somewhat of a call to action in that, you know, if you are looking for, you know, it's not about mobbing. I mean, mobbing's great and it can be a great way to build effectiveness in your organization and learning, and there's a lot of benefits, but any great things, you know, creating a safe space for people to try it out and learn, and then for a way for them to go back in a protected way and try it together or keep trying it, just seems like a good experiments to run if you're wanting to see innovation at a more system level, I suppose. So
And let me put it this way too, is I actually spoke about this in Japan last year before COVID, in terms of talking about immersive learning spaces. And that is, if you're at a very procedure and process oriented organization, it doesn't take you a lot of time to run an experiment. Basically, you're not asking your management chain to literally say, you know, to literally say, I want to revamp the entire organization and change how we work. I mean, ideally, that would be nice if you're having those issues, but you can make small improvements to the way you work by running very short experiments. It's a lot easier to ask your manager for a week than it is to ask him for 3 months or 6 months or even a month. A week is doable in many cases, and you'll be able to learn something from the experiments that you try out. So experiment a lot, fail quickly, succeed, and try to iterate on that and see what you can learn from it. And usually, especially in more of the process and procedural oriented organizations, that's kind of the approach that you have to take. It's unless you know, they bring somebody in and do a top-down smash of changing how the organization is going to work, generally the only change is going to be incremental, small, and iterative.
I think that is really true. I think going back further in my career, places that were more process procedure, you're right. If you sell it as, hey, I want to boil the ocean, I want to change how everybody works in these five different departments, and it's going to take a year rollout to do. Yeah. For one, you don't even want to do that. Even let's just assume that you're omniscient and you know exactly the right path for the company that's going to make everything better. Your chances of success are low. But also, as you were saying, in a more procedure-oriented organization, the appetite for that is a hard sell, right? It's a very hard sell. Whereas if, hey, I want to do a learning experience for a day or a week or, you know, something like that, or we want to try this, usually the buy-in's not as hard. Yeah. Right on. Cool. Did you have any other questions, Chris? You know, I would be tempted to, you know, for my wife to ask you for a discount, but I'm sure you can't do that.
Can't do that.
No, dang it.
it was a really good conversation, and you know, just the ideas around tooling and new tooling and learning and just remote mobbing in general have been really good. I wanted to give you the opportunity to maybe call out anything that you wanted to promote or plug.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. So my wife, Lisa Wacos Muglesio, and I'll obviously there'll be some links or something that I can provide for you, has a lot of courses on Pluralsight that are awesome for folks who are just starting out in development, whether it's source control or for like Unity. There's a lot of different things there. She's awesome, as good or better of a coach than I am. There's also, we're actually looking for two new coaches on our team right now. So if some of the things that I've talked about in terms of helping out teams resonates with you, please reach out to me on either Twitter or LinkedIn. I'll provide that information to the hosts here. And I'll be more than happy to chat with you about that or figure out what next steps are. That's really about it. I'm really happy and thankful that I've been able to talk with you. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a fun conversation to have. That's for sure.
Fantastic. And I think that there's a mailing list sign up for Codehort, right? Is that correct?
There is. Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So as things progress on that, we'll let the mailing list know, and we'll move forward.
Okay. Already signed up while we're recording this episode. Nice.
Cool.
And before we close, I think there has to be one more exchange that has to happen between you two. You both have a common language that I think the audience needs to hear. So maybe say something that some of our audience might understand.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Do shokana.
Ohio.
Do show. Ohio.
Hey, sorry to put you on the spot there.
We've both spoken in Japan and at different times, and we found that out just before the recording this episode.
So yeah,
it was just the fun stuff. But be sure to share this episode with anyone that you think it might help. If you're trying to maybe increase the amount of learning or maybe reduce the number of times that hero has come in to rescue the code, then this might be a good episode to share with people in your organization or people that you know personally. And with that said, like and subscribe, and we'll see you all later next time.